You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every
heart. James Cagney was a song and dance man on the vaudeville circuit before he rose to stardom as the quintessential tough guy in films like The Public Enemy and White Heat. In a new musical, Robert Creighton brings Cagney to life, from his early years on the mean streets of the Lower East Side to his career as a Hollywood icon and even his lesser-known side as a political activist. Cagney is on stage at the West Side Theater on West 43rd Street, and I'm delighted to welcome its star to our show.
Hello. Thank you. So nice to be here.
In addition to starring in the show, didn't you also co-write original music and lyrics for it?
I did.
So was the show itself your idea?
It was. It started when I grew up in Canada, but came here to go to acting school. And in my, I think near the end of my first year, my acting teacher said to me, "You remind me of Jimmy Cagney. Sort of has his energy. You look a bit like him. I know you like to tap dance on the side." And that thus began a obsession with his learning about his films, and became obsessed with him on screen. And a little while later, the fire got lit to create a show about his life.
Then you had to research in preparation for the role.
Yeah.
I'm sure you watched all the movies.
Yes, as many as I could get my hands on. I used to live down the street from a Blockbuster, and I would go in and harass them to get more classic Cagney films in there.
Were you able to talk to people who worked with him?
Some who've worked with him. Now many. The beauty of doing this show in New York is so many people who... people know about it. So family members have come out of the woodwork, and I've become friends with members of his family. His niece, who sort of carries on some of his legacy with his real estate and all that kind of thing. But his family members have become friends, and people who show up and tell me their personal stories of interacting with him has just been amazing. That's the great part of doing it here in the city.
Can't playing someone so well-known be tricky? How do you find the right balance to create a believable character without making him into a caricature, especially someone like Cagney, who impersonators like Frank Gershon and Rich Little used to mimic? You never say, "You dirty rat," in
no,
the show.
No, that's right. No, in fact, we say, Cagney says, "I never really did say, 'You dirty rat,'" because he didn't. That's what he said.
It was a longer sentence, actually.
That's right. "You dirty yellow-bellied," blah, blah, blah. He said versions of that, but then when Gorshin started impersonating him, that sort of caught on as the thing. But it's the key question as an actor, like when you're doing a biographical musical about someone, and someone who's so visible to people in film, it's not like he's a historical figure. You can go watch the movies and see the real Jimmy Cagney. I take his advice to play him. When he was playing George M. Cohan, he was asked a lot, "Well, are you going to imitate, or do you imitate Cohan?" And he said, "I don't believe in imitation, because then you can only do what they did. Limits your creativity. What you do is you take the essence of that person and then you play it for real." So that's what I choose to do with Cagney.
In looking at that scene in which he says, "You yellow belly, dirty rat," or whatever, he doesn't seem as mannered as we remember him again in all of the imitations.
I think he was ahead of his time as an actor. You know, a lot of those films of those days, of course, they were stylized and it could be broad and that, and whatnot. But I really believe that in my watching his films, there was never a false word out of his mouth. You really did believe everything he said. And he, even with his quirks sometimes, and he did that on purpose, he wanted to leave each character, even though some of them were similar, each character had his own little quirks that he did on purpose to make them memorable to the audience.
You begin with his life as a young man on the Lower East Side. Was he from a working-class Irish family?
He was.
But did he always want to be an actor?
No, never wanted to be an actor. He wanted to support his family. He was, when he first got into show business, he was wrapping gifts at Wanamaker's around the holiday season, and his buddy who he was wrapping gifts with said, "You know, up at Keith's Music Theater on 81st and Broadway, they're auditioning for dancers in this show," and he said, "You're a good dancer," and he was, from the Saturday nights, you know, at the street dances, knew a little Irish dancing, and his mother had taught him the Peabody, so he went and auditioned, and it turned out to be a show called Every Sailor. He got the part. It was eight guys. His first show, think about this, the toughest guy in film, and his first show was done in drag, which I actually do in our play, but that's how he got into vaudeville, and they were paying $35 a week, which was a lot of money right then.
Then he had to learn how to tap dance?
Yes, and he learned to tap dance he was a great imitator. Funny you should ask about imitating him, because he was, in fact, a great imitator when it came to dance, and that's a lot how he learned.
You do a lot of tap dancing in the show.
A lot.
You won an Astaire Award for your performance. Were you already an accomplished tap dancer when you began to work on it?
I guess you would say yes, although I started tap, where I grew up, my big dream was to be a hockey player. And then I grew up in a small town in Ontario, Canada.
Well, tricky footwork either way.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm the youngest of six kids, and my parents were beautiful dancers together, not trained dancers, but gorgeous on the floor. Everyone would comment on how beautiful they were together. And I learned how to dance as a kid growing up, lead my four sisters around the floor. And so when I moved to New York, I had had one summer where I went to a musical theater camp when I was 18, where I learned a few steps, but I had no vocabulary tap-wise, but I could do those like few steps fast and furious because I practiced them all the time. But then when I came here and began an acting school on the side, I would run off and take tap classes and got pretty good pretty quickly because I was so keen on doing it.
In his early years in show business, Cagney toured the vaudeville circuit. How did he go from vaudeville to starring as a tough guy in gangster films?
Very interesting question, and we cover parts of it in the play. I wish, you know, as the fan and the sort of conceiver of the show, I'm glad I collaborated with people who knew how to tell a story that wasn't just from a fan's point of view, because I would like the whole story there. We'd be there 8 hours talking about this. But he started in vaudeville, was on the circuit, came back, ultimately got into a Broadway show that Al Jolson bought the rights to and sold to Warner Brothers. And when he sold that, Penny Arcade to Warner Brothers, he said, you should have those two kids who play their parts on Broadway, Joan Blondell and James Cagney, do it in the movie. They were so good. So Warner brought them out, put them on contract, on a temporary contract. And then his fourth movie, so he was in the stable of actors, which we do deal with a lot because Cagney pushed against that system ultimately and became one of the founders of the Screen Actors Guild because of the working conditions he was under when his films were already making millions of dollars. He was still making a few hundred a week. But four movies in, he did Public Enemy. He was cast in the sidekick role, and then they watched the dailies and said, no, he should be playing the lead guy. And that's the movie, of course, where he put the grapefruit in the face.
Which you reenact in the show.
It's so fun to do it in the show because you feel people, when they see the grapefruit come out, you can hear the audience on the matinees especially, oh, there's the grapefruit, oh, watch what happens here. And then I love that part.
Was the grapefruit scene with Mae Clark in the original script, or was it improvised?
This is from Cagney's own mouth. A lot of people, and we tell our sort of slight version of it, but in the book Cagney by Cagney, he tells the story of how they had finished shooting the scene, and he went to Blondell's dressing room and he said, wouldn't it have been funny if at the end of that I had maybe hit you in the face with a grapefruit or done something? Let's go tell him we need to do it one more time and crack up the crew. And that's how that scene was done like that. He came back, they shot it again, smashed it in her face. And movie history was made.
I'm speaking with Robert Creighton, who stars as James Cagney in a show called Cagney. That's at the West Side Theater on West 43rd Street. The show opens and closes at the SAG Awards in 1977, where he's been given a Lifetime Achievement Award. Why did you decide to frame his story with that event? Was it really an important thing for him?
Well, his AFI Lifetime Achievement Award was a huge thing for him, hosted by Frank Sinatra, and it's what a lot of people watch these days on YouTube, and you can see Cagney get this, really see who he is in his speech. He's so articulate and funny. You may have seen that. Mm-hmm. This is a made-up scenario as our key scene to get he and Jack Warner in the room together, because Jack Warner is sort of the guy he pushed most against, and he comes to present the award unbeknownst to Cagney, and we made that up to get them in the room.
Well, Jack Warner had mixed relations with a number of his stars.
Absolutely.
He never liked Humphrey Bogart for some reason.
I've become friends with a wonderful woman named Kate Edelman Johnson, and her father was Lou Edelman, who was a producer of 12 of Cagney's films. And she came to the show and said to Bruce Sabbath, who plays Jack Warner wonderfully and pretty harshly, you know, because that's who he was. She said, you made him nice. At the end, he was, I can't say the words here, what she said about him, but he was not a liked man.
And didn't Cagney sue the studio at one point?
Walked out at the height of his career, 1936. He's probably the biggest box office draw of the time, which gave him leverage, obviously, but on behalf of himself, and which is really the theme of our show. He really did not like bullies and really wanted to stick up for the little guy. He walked out and went back to Martha's Vineyard for a year. There was a big little legal battle. He came back with a much better contract and script approval.
He was also a political activist. Is that a side of him that most people don't know about?
People are really surprised when they come and to know what a humanitarian he was. He literally supported like the defense fund of the Scottsboro Boys and when the cotton pickers in the San Joaquin Valley were striking. He's the one who sent funds to support their defense and whatnot.
Did that get him into trouble during the McCarthy era?
Well, pre-McCarthy, actually, there was a Dees committee in the late 30s. And 1938, he was called up. I actually just recently, someone sent me the newspaper article. It wasn't on the front page. It was buried somewhere about Cagney going before the House on Un-American Activities. Pre-McCarthy, but the same sort of thing where people were being called out. And
was he being accused of being a communist?
He was. He was being questioned whether he had ties to the Communist Party because the communists had got a hold of a check that he wrote for one of these causes and said, look, James Cagney supports what we're doing and communism. And he answered all the questions, and it was dismissed. There was no question that he was a patriot and just trying to take care of the little guy.
And he went on USO tours to entertain the troops during World War II, I guess a way of showing that he was a real patriot. Mm-hmm. Also became more conservative in his later years. Wasn't he friends with Bob Hope and Ronald Reagan?
Great friends with Hope and Reagan. It's been really interesting. There's one of the great American portrait artists, Everett Raymond Kinsler, who was for the last 10 years a dear friend of Cagney's and was a portrait artist for many presidents and Cagney and Reagan and all these people. He's been telling me wonderful stories about those relationships and whatnot because he was right there and it was really something. And the USO part of Cagney's life, we do the opening of the second act basically right after the first number is about a 16-minute USO conglomeration. That's where we do most of the show is original music, but that's where we do all a Cohan medley, and it's very exciting. We get standing ovation sometime right in the middle of the show, and it's very exciting.
Bob Hope is also a character in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about that music. First of all, Cagney won an Oscar for his portrayal of George M. Cohan in Yankee Doodle Dandy.
He was
able to return to his roots in a way after he had become a star as a tough guy.
Gave him such joy.
When you were writing the songs for the show, were you inspired by Cohan's music?
Absolutely. And one of the great things, I originally wrote the whole score, and then when this theater in Florida agreed to help us develop it, they introduced me to Christopher McGovern, who's a brilliant composer who I had already known for many years, was an old friend, and they said, would you mind working? I said, of course I'll work with him. And he really fleshed out the score. The songs of mine that were worthy remain. There's still a few of them in there. But one of our goals was to make something of a whole so that the Cohan songs don't stick out as something that's very different. And I think one of the biggest compliments we've been paid along the way is that that has happened. We needed songs to tell the story, so the already period songs didn't always do that, so we had to write our own. And then we give people the satisfaction of hearing those great Cohan songs that are such a part of the fabric of our country, our culture.
We also get a sense of his very close relationship with his wife, Willie. How did they meet?
They met in a show in New York at the Long Acre Theater. She was one of the chorus girls dancing, and he was in the chorus, a chorus boy, and also a featured dancer. And actually, to make money, was a dresser to one of the stars. I guess they did that. So he was a dresser to the stars and dancing in the show. And he met her. She was 16. And 2 years later, I think 2 or 3 years later, they married, and they were married 66 years, he and Willie.
One of those rare Hollywood marriages that lasted the whole time.
I always joke, it would have been nice if he had had a few scandals along the way, but like as the writer of the show, it would have been very helpful. You know, couldn't he have had a little drug problem or affair somewhere? But no. So we've focused on the themes that, and it really resonates with people even today. He didn't like bullies. He stuck up for the little guy, and that's sort of where the big Warner conflict comes.
And I think audiences love singing and dancing.
You know, I would say if there's a hallmark of our show, people walk out happy. I think it's the most, I really do feel in my life right now, I'm putting something good into the world because they do love the singing and dancing and they are uplifted by it for sure.
Cagney focused on gardening at the end of his life, also painting, something that really is hard to dramatize.
Yes, so we don't.
How long have you been doing it? the show?
This run we've done, we've been opened, we had previews in March, opened April 3rd of last year. So 10 months, over 10 months.
An open run?
Open-ended run. We're on sale right now till the end of May. One thing I'll point out to people, because a lot of your listeners might like to know this, we have Thursday matinees. We're one of only two shows in New York that have, because our matinees were selling right out. So we moved our Thursday night show to the afternoon, and it's been a great success, and we love our matinees.
Has anyone talked about bringing it to Broadway?
Oh, yes. But there's a kid can dream. I get asked that every day when I walk out the theater. When are you going to be? Are you moving to Broadway? It should be on Broadway. And it's a great compliment. We love our home at the West Side Theater. It fits our – we look like a big show in the West Side Theater. You know, it feels like a big musical in that beautiful space. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, you're close enough to Times Square to be
called
a Broadway show. There's some theaters that are called Broadway that aren't even close to Broadway.
Right, and we call ourselves Broadway adjacent. And our wonderful producer, Rookie Kane Larimer, our lead producer, she has advertised this show, one of the great things, as if it's a Broadway show. Most people think it is.
Cagney is on stage at the West Side Theater on West 43rd Street. And if you want more information about it, we have posted all sorts of stuff on our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. Thank you, Robert Creighton, for being on our show today.
Oh, it's a delight.
I'm going to expect you to tap dance out.
I'll do it.